This is Critical Thinking Part 9, The Crime of the Century. This Sonic Gravity podcast episode is intended for adult audiences only. It will cover some global developments on the coronavirus pandemic, which involve a discussion of biology and pharmaceutical therapies as I understand them. I am not a doctor or a medical clinician of any kind and offer no medical advice to anyone. This podcast episode is intended for informational and entertainment purposes only. This Sonic Gravity episode has nothing to do with healthcare choices. This episode is about the crime of the century and everything that follows. Are the facts of the case in the eyes of a madman. So one of the best lung docs and experienced field clinicians, Dr. Pierre Corey, who published 10 papers on COVID. Dr. Corey is the most prominent and respected, probably the very top chest radiologist in the world, who in late 2020 testified before Congress. He realized that it wasn't the viral infection, so to speak, that was killing everyone. It was their immune response that was killing them. And Dr. Corey began to put COVID patients on corticosteroids to suppress their immune response, which was what was killing patients, and there were too many patients that were developing blood clots, so Corey also prescribed anticoagulants. And Dr. Corey was interviewed by Brett Weinstein on June 6, 2021. He described the medical intellectual authoritarianism where leaders of hospitals and the NIH and the CDC and the WHO were telling field clinicians and doctors on the front line how they could and couldn't treat their patients. And Dr. Corey said that the medical authoritarian regime made huge mistakes in the beginning of the pandemic, because we didn't have very many therapies for viruses, so at the beginning it was all supportive care. The medical intellectual authority only permitted doctors to perform supportive care, vitamins and keeping people hydrated and Tylenol, just give them some Robitussin, so to speak. The entire global medical community said the way to deal with this is supportive care only, and that's why we were running out of ventilators. That was what was killing everyone and making us run out of ventilators, was that our bodies, after they'd killed the virus's residue in dead parts was exceptionally messy, and our own immune systems ended up killing us. So our policy of supportive care in the absence of randomized clinical trials did nothing, and supportive care strategies were killing patients. So Dr. Corey and several other preeminent clinicians and medical specialists, globally recognized doctors like Paul E. Merrick, Umberto Maduri, who was also the foremost authority on corticosteroid treatment of lung injuries and practically invented the CPAP and non-invasive ventilation, these 10 giants of medicine who created the FLCCA, the Frontline COVID-19 Critical Care Alliance, and their website's www.flccc.net. And in this interview, Dr. Corey talked about this Japanese doctor in 1975, Dr. Shitoshi Omura, a scientist who specialized in looking at substances made by organisms and tested the substances to see if they produced anything that was of medicinal value. He found an organism called Streptomyces near a golf course in Japan. It's the only place they've ever found this in the world. This substance produced by Streptomyces was called avermectin. Produced naturally by this bacteria, Streptomyces, it was radically effective as a nerve agent eradicating parasites and worms. In 2012, ivermectin was showing promise, too, against some virus models like Zika, Dengue, West Nile, and influenza. And ivermectin is one of the World Health Organization's global must-have medicines. And it's been prescribed at least 4 billion times. It's perhaps one of the most safest drugs we have. It's safer than Tylenol. And according to Dr. Corey, cell cultures of viruses were being eradicated by ivermectin in 48 hours. And Dr. Corey explained how the P1 and South African variants and all the variants that have come in contact with ivermectin and COVID was eradicated by ivermectin in Zimbabwe. And in that interview, Dr. Corey discussed some of the big differences between ivermectin and the vaccines. Ivermectin is a natural substance and the vaccine is engineered in a lab. And the vaccine injects spike proteins into you so that your body can recognize spike proteins and your antibodies recognize the disease. Ivermectin is a natural biologic that in your system binds to the actual virus spike protein and prevents it from fusing and locks it down. Additionally, it's among the safest drugs that we have, and it's effective as a preventative treatment. It also addresses the multi-phase disease progression because it has anti-inflammatory properties, and it also fights the cytokine response, the body's autoimmune response, and it has efficacious long-haul patient recovery aspects too. So the vaccine is an engineered product that puts a viral spike protein into your body and gives you a shot at reacting to the virus, but viruses can evolve and defeat those antibodies. On the other other hand, ivermectin is a natural biologic. It binds to the spike protein of the virus to prevent infection. Anti-inflammatory properties treat the cytokine immune response. Complications is immediately efficacious for long-haul patients, and it kills all variants, and no variants have escaped it. And if you remember back in April and May, India was burning people in the streets and their COVID infections and deaths were skyrocketing. Several Indian states decided to administer ivermectin to their populations around May 20th. The Indian COVID pandemic sharply plummeted within 2 weeks, and I've heard some people say the correlation isn't causation. And while that's a truism in statistics, in this case, it's stupid. And we kind of talked about it before, but I want to get into a little bit more details. Here's why. Correlation isn't causation, but causation is causation. Some states in India outlawed ivermectin at the same time, and some states required it. Three Indian states that required ivermectin had these three results 3 weeks later. Delhi reduced its infections by 97%. Uttar Pradesh reduced its infections by 95%. And Uttarakhand reduced its infections by 87%. On the other hand, Indian states that did not adopt ivermectin experienced the following. Assam infections increased by 240%. Arunachal Pradesh increased its infections by 656%. And Tripura increased its infections by 828% over the same time. So in a sample group of hundreds of millions of people, the 90% eradication in a control group with a 600% case explosion, efficacy and causality is a mathematical certainty. In third world countries like Peru, El Salvador, and Honduras, no offense guys, mass prescribed ivermectin, which gave them incredibly better per capita metrics than the United States. They prescribed ivermectin at the inception of the pandemic. In the US, we've experienced a 10% per capita infection rate and a 0.18% death rate per capita. That means for our whole population, we've had a 10% chance of getting infected and almost a 0.2% chance of dying from COVID. So per capita in the US, we're 4 times more likely to be infected and 3 times more likely to die than the people in Honduras. We're 9 times more likely to be infected and 6 times more likely to die than in El Salvador. And in the US, statistically, we're 85 times more likely to be infected and 60 times more likely to die than in Nicaragua. And in Nicaragua, they have 2.5 times the population density we do. And that is a fact. And in the interview with Dr. Corey, Dr. Corey told how in Argentina, another doctor, Dr. Hector Cavillo, and 1,200 high-risk healthcare providers who were treating COVID patients undertook a study. All who volunteered to take ivermectin did. 788 volunteered to take ivermectin before going to treat patients, while 407 declined to take ivermectin. Of the 407 who didn't take ivermectin, 58% of them got sick, and one of them died. Of the 788 who volunteered to take ivermectin before treating patients, 0 of them got sick. That's 0 out of 788 people actively treating people who were infected with COVID. Now, in the UK, there is a World Health Organization expert consultant who performs systematic reviews and medical audits. And that team is led by Dr. Tess Laurie, who reviewed ivermectin and with a guideline committee of 65 experts, recommended ivermectin. Nobel laureate Satoshi Amora from the Kitsatsu Institute, distinguished researchers in Italy and Spain, all call for the systemic deployment of ivermectin based on scores of peer-reviewed, scientifically sound studies backed by preeminent clinicians and hundreds of millions of treatment outcomes on a global scale. And here's the conflict of interest. Here's what creates the crime and the motive, the financial motive for the pharmaceutical industrial complex to suppress the effectiveness of ivermectin. The Pfizer vaccine, Moderna, J&J, AstraZeneca, all those vaccines, in order to do trials and qualify for the emergency use authorization, there can't be an adequate existing substitute treatment for the disease, or the emergency use authorization from the FDA cannot be granted. And Merck, the J&J partner on its vaccine, came out to say ivermectin hasn't been studied and none of these vaccines were compared to ivermectin during the vaccine trials on purpose. And in September 2020, we know that Dr. Corey put ivermectin on everyone's radar screen. And while those trials were going on, none of them were compared to ivermectin. And that is a fact. And why would they? Because when they proved ivermectin was efficacious, they would have researched themselves out of their patents, they would have researched themselves out of their emergency use authorization, and they would have researched themselves out of billions of dollars in profits. And we know from the physics of leadership, the first law is that people want to do the best for themselves that they can. But what's really gross is that instead of notifying the public and corroborating the truth that ivermectin was an effective treatment way back in September of 2020, the pharmaceutical industrial complex let the entire world twist for 6 months while they developed a vaccine, when the whole world could have been getting ivermectin and we could have crushed the pandemic and all gotten back to normal and saved the lives of more than 2 million people worldwide. And if you think that's bad, just hang on, because it's gonna get a lot worse in a minute. And think about it just for a second. When India's radical success happened right after adopting an ivermectin-based national strategy that achieved amazing results, there was no energy to capitalize on that or unpack it or research it or try to adopt it. Instantly, the empire of the medical industrial complex, the global medical industrial complex, right out of the gate, fiercely condemning the use of ivermectin. There was no appetite to achieve those kinds of results through ivermectin anywhere else, which is absolutely unthinkable for any brain health service that cares about the lives and the safety of its people. Now, I'm vaccinated with the Pfizer vaccine. My 17-year-old son is vaccinated, and so is my wife. But here's why I'm not going to vaccinate my little girls, Belle and Savannah. And this isn't medical advice. Remember, this podcast episode is for informational and entertainment purposes only. This part is what makes me mad as a prosecutor. This is where it goes from bad to ugly. Because we need to talk about the risks that Dr. Jen Ashton, Dr. Sanjay Gupta, and Dr. Tony Fauci, the World Health Organization, the CDC, and the FDA, and the pharmaceutical industrial complex aren't telling us about. There's a dimension of vaccine performance called biotransmissibility. Conventional vaccines that are well tolerated are injected in the deltoid and are concentrated. That's good because your body can respond to it and attack the vaccine, which involves cytokine response, which is a response that damages our tissue. But if all the immune cytokine response transacts in your shoulder muscle, you get a sore shoulder and that's it. This vaccine has, and they knew it had it. The reason they paused the rollout of the J&J vaccine is that the vaccine is highly mobile in the body from the moment it's injected. It doesn't stay in the shoulder. It metastasizes throughout the whole body. And so your cytokinesis, as your body reacts to these spike proteins, this tissue damaging immune response transacts wherever your body finds those spike proteins. So if they find those spike proteins in your heart, that's where the cytokinesis reaction causes. And that's why a lot of children get this inflamed heart side effect from the vaccine, because they're immune system is catching those spike proteins as they're traveling through their hearts, which is very dangerous. And during an interview with Brett Weinstein on YouTube, Dr. Robert Malone, the inventor of messenger RNA vaccine technology, confirmed that after 48 hours, about 60% of the spike proteins from the vaccine injection, 60% of those viral nanoparticles in women collect in their ovaries, and about 30% of those spike proteins collect in their bone marrow. And this is a problem when our bodies react to the vaccine by deploying cytokines. As part of the immune response, our own cytokines will damage our tissue too. And all the cases of heart inflammation is obviously an immune response to cytokine activity that chase spike proteins through the arteries into the heart. And the reason there are complications with blood clots is because people's immune response involves attacking those spike proteins. And when cytokines adhere to those spike proteins, when your body catches them in a vein or in an artery, they're going to fight it wherever they are, even if it's in a vein where it can cause a clot. That could easily result in an amputated limb, a pulmonary embolism, which is a blood clot in the lung that could kill somebody, or an aneurysm, which is a blood clot in the brain that could kill someone. Now, the engineers of these vaccines used a transmembrane domain, essentially a lipid coating, to ensure these spike proteins stayed anchored and stayed put. They did a non-clinical study to verify this, which is the exact same lack of scientific rigor that the same scientists used to condemn the use of ivermectin. And it's pretty gross, right, that the FDA and the pharmaceutical industrial complex declined to voluntarily disclose this information to everyone that was taking the vaccine. We had to get it from Japan. And Dr. Malone said a lot of long-term complications can result from this, like lymphoma and leukemia. And Dr. Malone said that there are two complications that are presenting right now that the FDA and the pharmaceutical industrial complex know about but aren't telling us. And that is the bone marrow concentration as a side effect of thrombocytopenia, which is the blood not making platelets, which is the clotting component in our blood. And the second is a reactivation of latent human retroviruses, which means if you've had it once and got over it, you can get it again, like shingles or herpes. It's something that these spike proteins can reactivate by being released into your system from the vaccine. And Dr. Malone, the inventor of messenger RNA vaccine technology, also said that introducing messenger RNA vaccines during a pandemic was ill-advised because the introduction of engineered genetic material in a subject who might have a COVID infection would likely produce escape mutants of the virus that would likely be more resistant to the the vaccine, and it's possible that the Delta variant, which surfaced after the messenger RNA vaccines were in circulation, it's very possible that introducing the Pfizer-Moderna vaccine into an infected host is a plausible cause of the Delta variant. That's 70% resistant to one Pfizer or one Moderna shot and 30% resistant to two. And I think that makes sense, and I think the pharmaceutical industrial complex knows it too, because every time I hear about the Delta variant in the media, they're always making sure to blame it on India. And the thing that Dr. Robert Malone also said that was my biggest concern was that there was no data about reproductive toxicity, and he cautioned that reproductive damage, thalidomide, and reproductive toxicity of the vaccines is often not discoverable until the next generation starts having problems making babies or starts making babies with birth defects. And one of the biggest hypocrisies is that the pharmaceutical companies requested and the FDA approved emergency use authorization for a bunch of brand new, expensive, barely tested vaccines based on non-clinical studies regarding free spike protein risk and non-clinical reproductive toxicity speculation. And based on that, they're willing to inject billions of people with a dangerous genetically engineered viral spike protein with unknown likely severe long-term effects. And on that exact same scientific basis, they're rejecting the use of a globally available, widely accepted, naturally occurring medicine with 40 years of history that has won a Nobel Prize in Medicine in 2015, demonstrated antiviral promise since 2012, and has completely halted the pandemic in some states in India, and the most respected lung doctors in the world started an organization to promote it called the FLCCC, whose website is www.flccc.net. And the FLCCC has 50 studies to support its use, but Big Pharma, the media, and even the FDA and CDC, who are technically a bunch of medical bureaucrats and desk jockeys, seem to be unwilling to listen to these frontline, world-renowned expert medical clinicians who are on the battlefield fighting this pandemic for us. And these medical bureaucrats and profiteers absolutely refuse to accept the fact that defeating this pandemic doesn't take some expensive, patented, lucrative, dangerous, heart-inflaming, bone marrow-polluting, ovary-punishing, rushed vaccine. So I think we've just been fucked for patents and profits and our pharmaceutical corporations and even our own government leaders who are drinking from a fire hose and without the internal assets or leadership to stop it are just kind of going with the flow. And although me and my wife and my 17-year-old son have taken the Pfizer vaccine and didn't have any complications, I can guarantee you my little girls Bella and Savannah won't be taking this vaccine because their daddy isn't gonna let Big Pharma scramble their ovaries for profit. But I promise to always leave you better than I found you. So guess what? There is one substance grown from an obscure earthbound organism found only at one place on Earth near a golf course on the island of Japan. And that organism secretes a substance that defeats any virus because it attacks the proteins in the virus directly, preventing the virus from ever fusing and delivering its venom. And it's everywhere, and it's cheap. And if we can force our leaders to pull their heads all the way out of their asses, then maybe we can end this rampant pandemic in just a few weeks, exactly like Delhi did. And that is a fact. And when we do, those who covered up the cure to sell us their poison should be brought to justice, and that too is a fact. And I think we need to realize that we are enabling and submitting ourselves to a pharmaceutical and healthcare structure built for profit in the naive hope that those who profit from selling drugs really want to see our illnesses cured in the most efficacious and safest way possible, and are really committed to acting only in the best interest of the public. And this pandemic has proven conclusively that that is not the system we have right now. And think about it. Think about how dumb that is. Think about how dumb we are. We don't pay for cure. We pay for drugs. And we know from the physics of leadership that the pharmaceutical industrial complex is going to act in its own self-interest, and that is a fact. Now, I recorded this episode about a week ago, but Dr. Joseph Varone, who's been killing COVID with ivermectin in San Antonio and has been interviewed like 1,600 times, and every single time he talks about ivermectin, they edit it out of the broadcast. But here's the real danger. I can't prove it, but I'll stake my reputation as a psychopath on it. This Delta variant was caused by injecting a messenger RNA virus in a person who was already infected with COVID. And that's where the Delta variant came from. And if we keep making these immunizations and we keep injecting people who have a chance of being sick, we're never going to get out of this cycle and we'll always be buying vaccines just like they want us to. Because the pharmaceutical industrial complex and the medical industrial complex doesn't give a shit whether or not we're healthy. We know that because if they did, we'd all be done with this virus. It would have ended 9 months ago and we'd all be on ivermectin right now. But we're not. And that is a fact. Because if it wasn't for a Japanese FOIA request, we wouldn't even know that the biotransmissivity of the vaccines is such that it doesn't stay in our shoulders and it's going to send 60 to 70% of those spike proteins and lipid nanoparticles to rest in our daughter's ovaries. And that is a fact. And what that means is if those cytokine responses transact in their ovaries, so when our little girl's immune systems start to fight the virus inside their bodies, they're gonna fight that virus on the battlefield of their ovaries. I guess we'll just have to wait and see. Maybe we'll get lucky and it won't cause any problems. Or it could just give them problems conceiving. Or maybe it'll make them unable to conceive. Or maybe we should all cross our fingers and hope that it doesn't cause birth defects. But that's how it happens. That's how the heart damage and heart inflammation and ovary damage and blood clots, that's why it's happening, is because the biotransmissibility of the vaccine. The vaccine goes into our shoulder and then it shoots all over our bodies, and then our body's immune response or cytokine response attacks the virus wherever it finds it, and if it finds it in a place that's sensitive, then it's going to damage that place. Wherever our immune response catches the vaccine and fights it. And pretty soon they're going to want you to take a booster, which is going to send more spike proteins everywhere. And we're going to run into the same problem when they start injecting the booster in people. They're going to create other escape mutations, just like the Delta variant. But in some ways we deserve it, right? We have nobody to blame but ourselves, because we've created a for-profit pharmaceutical and medical system where the most lucrative business model is not to cure our illnesses. The most lucrative model for the pharmaceutical industrial complex is to help us live with our illnesses for longer. And that is a fact. I don't want to make this podcast episode about our healthcare system, but I think it's inescapable that if we don't democratize and structure our healthcare system so hospitals, drug companies, and doctors don't get paid just for participating in our healthcare, they need to get paid for delivering the healthcare outcomes we want. Because if Big Pharma got paid by the cure, this would have all been over 8 months ago. And that too is a fact.